This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, good morning. It's an honor to be with you today and to be talking about this subject, communicating effectively with teens. So as we think about this subject, you encounter young people, and these young people, these teenagers are going through a very vulnerable time of life, and they're experiencing lots of change really fast. Things are happening, and you as an adult have something to share with them. I think you have a message that they want to hear and need to hear. But our communication needs to be effective. Now, I'd like somebody to tell me quickly, what is it that makes communication effective, or when is it that communication is effective?
When they understand what you're saying.
Okay, understanding. What else?
Heart to heart.
Heart to heart. All right, so those are two ideas that come to my mind right away, is the idea of understanding and this idea of connecting with the heart. And there's a lot of communication that probably does take place, but it's not effective because we miss the heart, right? And so I like this picture because often the teens that we're interacting with, they wear their masks, they put on this front, but behind it, there's something else going on. And Proverbs talks about a wise man being able to dig deep into the heart and draw out what's happening inside. So we want to be wise. I like this quote where Susie Heyman says, we tend to consider the importance of big talks about significant topics with teens. And some of you might be here this morning thinking, I want to be that person that, you know, sits down and has these big talks with teens. I want to be that person. I want to be able to really, you know, have these conversations that have long-lasting impact. But she goes on to say, but the ability to connect when it really matters is often based on the ability to connect when it doesn't matter. And I see someone snapping a picture here. I wanted to make a comment at the beginning and failed to do so. I don't have a handout, but at the end of this session, I will have my email address up there, and if you really want a copy of this presentation, I will email you the slides if you email me and request them. So, back to the talk. It's the ability to connect when it doesn't matter. It's the ability to connect when it really doesn't matter that usually enables us to connect when it does. Who is that? Who is that? Anybody know? Who is that? This is a picture of a man who was playing violin in the Washington, D.C. metro system. He played for about 40 minutes, 40 to 50 minutes, and while he played, there was 1,000 people that passed by. Less than a dozen, I believe, stopped to even pay attention to this man playing violin. This was an experiment sponsored by the Washington Post, and they chose this man because he's Joshua Bell. And I don't know if that name rings a bell to you, but he was playing violin on a violin made in the 18th century. It's worth $3.5 million. And this same person will pack out venues, standing room only, where people pay lots of money to listen to Joshua Bell. In fact, in order to have him play, my understanding is, at least back in 2007, they would charge, or he would charge, approximately $1,000 per minute. During this time in the metro, he had a basket there. I think he earned $37. What happened? people fail to understand, that word understanding, fail to understand who it was in front of them. And as we think about communicating effectively with teams, one of the places we need to start with, who is that person in front of us? Who is it that we're communicating with? Who is that person? Try to understand. So where are we going? Where are we going in this talk? I want to think just a little bit about seeking to understand the teams in our lives, and then I want to talk about some goals that we might have and some connecting strategies, and then just a little bit about what it means to go deeper. It seems like only yesterday that I was a teenager, and if you're like me, you can remember that time very well. Many of the situations and conversations that I have they're very vivid in my mind. I don't think that I'm out of touch with my fears, my frustrations, the ideals, the expectations, and even the temptations that I faced. And I imagine that most of you are like me. If we dig deep enough, there's still a little bit of a teenager inside of us all. But as I reflect on my life, I realize, I often say that the first 20 years of our lives kind of happens to us. It just kind of happens to us, and we're not really thinking hard about what's happening. And then the rest of our lives, we try to figure out what in the world happened the first 20 years. So as we encounter the teens around us, my question is, will our communication be effective? Will it reach the heart? And I want to think about some strategies for doing that. So first of all, seeking to understand. Let's start with thinking briefly about how the teenage years are a time of transition. I'm going to flip some things up here, and I'd like you to call out some things that are going on as you think about this. So we know that teens, there's a transition taking place. They're changing physically. What's happening physically? Just call some things out. What comes to your mind? All right, so we had growth changes. I heard something else.
Hormones,
okay.
Voice changes.
Yeah. Lots of things are changing physically. So these teens that we're interacting with are changing. Neurologically, what's happening? Well, maybe we're not as familiar with this, but their brain's still developing. And my understanding is that the frontal cortex of the brain is one of the last things to develop. And guess what that's primarily responsible for?
Decision-making.
Yeah. Decision-making, higher-level reasoning. Yeah. And so maybe that explains why sometimes we have teens making what appears to be impulsive decisions or skipping what seems to be really obvious. Maybe they miss social cues, etc. But they're changing neurologically, and so we need to be aware of that. Intellectually, they're changing. Young teens generally are not able to think abstractly. That happens later. In my experience, I only see teens starting to think abstractly at about 17, 18 years of age. Sometimes the ladies get there a little sooner, but generally, that's when I start to notice it. And so sometimes I can talk and use analogies, and I think they should be able to connect the dots, and they look at me and they're not connecting them. And so this ability to think abstractly comes later. They're changing emotionally. And the idea of hormones was already mentioned. Hormones are pumping through their bodies. And they're trying to figure out how to control these new emotions they're feeling while at the same time learning how to express these new emotions appropriately. So all this is happening. Morally, they're changing as well. They're no longer seeing life through a black and white lens where everything is right or wrong, and they're starting to see the world through more of a wisdom perspective. They are no longer categorizing everything, but they're starting to see it a little bit more wisely, as I mentioned. Socially, they're forming these little subcultures, and they have their own unique practices and values. And you might have watched, you know, these teens, and they see each other, and they have their ways of, you know, I won't try to illustrate, but they have their ways of meeting each other. And then you come along and you stick your hand out, and it's different. Okay, they have their own little subcultures. And spiritually, they're starting to grapple with some of the big decisions in life. So all this is happening at one time. This is all changing. And if you were to use one word to describe all these changes and how it's impacting the teens, what word would come to your mind? Call them out.
Wild.
Chaotic. What?
Wild.
Wild. The word that I thought of and I see when I interact with teens is this word insecurity. All of these things are creating a very insecure young person. And I think we forget this. We've all been there, but we kind of moved out of that season of life, and we sometimes forget the insecurity that goes along with that stage of life. And so there's a lot of insecurity taking place. In addition, we want to think about the world of complexity that they're facing. It's a complex world. They are being bombarded with lots of information. And again, we have forgotten how we've learned to navigate that. There was a season of life where it was all new for us as well. And then we learned how to process all this information. We've learned how to sort through it. We've learned that there's some things we just don't pay attention to, other things we do. But for teens, this is all new to them. And so all this information is coming at them, and they're trying to process this new level of information. More choices. Their lives used to be fairly simple. Mom and dad told them, this is what you're going to do. This is where you're going to go. This is, you know, what you're going to wear. This is how you're going to live. And all of a sudden, they're starting to have more freedom in making their own choices. And this can be tough. There's more working parts to track. They have chores to do, schoolwork to do. Maybe they have a part-time job. Maybe they joined the youth group. Maybe they have other social opportunities, and we could go on and on. There's more working parts to track. And if you're a parent here, then you know that one of our goals is to try to teach our children to be responsible and to get them to track the parts, right? So that mom and dad don't have to always do it for them. But this is all a whole new world for them. There's more decisions to make. Oh, I skipped. More to remember. As children, someone was remembering things for them, but now they're being expected to remember everything. There's more decisions to make. As children, many decisions were made for them, but now they're actually the ones making the decisions. They can't blame their parents anymore, and that's a big thing. Do you realize how easy it is when you can say, Mom and Dad said I have to go here, or Mom and Dad said this, but now when they're making the decision, they have to own it, and that brings in a whole new level of stress to their lives. There's more responsibility. More is being thrust upon their shoulders. People are beginning to look at them with expectations. This morning we had those teens stand, and we just all of a sudden put a little bit of expectation upon them, didn't we? And the expectation is powerful. There's nothing, it's not that it's the wrong thing, but it's just the reality that we're all beginning to look at them with expectation, and it's new for them because they've never experienced this before. All this is happening, and they're not getting enough sleep. Okay. Studies show that they should have 8 to 10 hours of sleep, and yet most of them probably don't get that. And we know how important sleep is. So we already said that there's a level of insecurity, but with all these things taking place, there's another word that comes to my mind, and it's the word stress, or we would say anxiety. So with all of this going on, they're experiencing a level of stress, and they're experiencing a level of anxiety. And if you're working with teens, or if you have been working with teens, we're seeing greater and greater amounts of stress and anxiety in young people. I think it's escalating. And there's probably multiple factors that are contributing to this. But this is a reality. So we need to be sensitive. We need to talk about it. I found that simply helping teens process these stressors, helping teens process what's going on, helping them simply talk about it helps to relieve the anxiety and stress. And so as an adult relating to them, one of the best things you can do is just engage them in conversation about these stressors and what's actually happening. So seek to understand. So we're talking about the importance of understanding. The third thing I want to remind us of is the importance of seeing teens through a biblical lens. So we said that we need to understand the transition that's taking place. We need to understand the complexity. But we also need to understand them through a biblical lens. Now, there's a book of the Bible, Proverbs, that was mostly written to young people, to teenagers, possibly. And if we study the book of Proverbs, we begin to see themes emerge. And what I'm going to do is just put several of these themes up here to help us think about seeing teenagers, young people, through a biblical lens. First of all, teens generally do not seek wisdom or value correction. They generally do not do this. And so let's recognize that this is true. Let's not rebuke them. Let's not try to put false expectations upon them. Let's encourage them to seek wisdom or value correction. But let's recognize that they generally don't. They generally do not come to you and request your input into their decisions. Secondly, teens tend to be defensive of their thoughts and actions. And so if you've related to teens and you've talked with them about their decisions, you may have experienced a defensive person. Because teens generally, they tend to, there's exceptions, but they generally tend to get defensive about their thoughts and their actions. Teens are generally poor listeners. And so when we try to communicate effectively with them, we shouldn't be surprised when they don't appear to be listening to us. Okay? They tend to be poor listeners. Teens tend to be unwise in their choice of companions. They tend to be unwise. Sometimes you probably had this experience already where you're observing a teenager and you observe that they're drawing closer and closer to another person. You're like, no, that's not the right person for you to be connecting with. That's not a good relationship. They don't see it because generally speaking, there's always exceptions, but generally speaking, teens tend to be unwise in their choice of companions. A father told me once, he said, you know, when our children are young, we're like, be friends with everybody, you know, like go talk with that person, you know, don't just stick with your little group, you need to be friends with everybody. And then about the time they're teenagers and they're starting to move out into the world, we're like, you probably shouldn't hang out with that person or that person or that person or that. And we will really reduce the list. But that's because I think we all recognize that generally speaking, teens tend to do a poor job at selecting the kind of people that are going to move them in the direction they want to go. Teens are extra susceptible to sexual temptation. Okay, we have teens that mean well. They want good things. They love the Lord. But they are extra susceptible to sexual temptation. And so we need to recognize this. We need to expect this. And then finally, teens tend to deny the law of sowing and reaping. Or maybe it'd be better to say they tend to see themselves as the exception. It's not that they deny it. It's always true for everybody else. But they're always the exception. And again, well-meaning, good, fine young people, but they don't always see themselves as fitting into the law. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, Johnny made that decision, and so did 20 other people, and I see what happened to them. But that's not going to happen to me, because somehow I'm different. I'm the exception here. And so I see that a lot in working with young people. And so we want to seek to understand the teens that we work with, that we interact with. And I think that seeing them through this biblical lens helps us approach them correctly. And then also, teens are generally unaware of their heart. And so I've had the experience of sitting down and talking with teens already, and I'd ask them a question like, so why did you do that? Or what was going on in your mind when you did that? Or what was going on in your heart? And my experience has been, I get a lot of very blank stares where, you know, it's like, I don't get it. What does that have to do with my heart, right? They're not making the connection. There again, we have that whole thing of the abstract thinking. And it can be a little bit of a challenge for teens to start to connect all these dots and to realize that what you love comes out. And so we want to help teens take everything back to their heart and say, what's really going on inside there? What's this say about your love? Maybe I'll just pause there. Any quick questions about number one, seeking to understand? Anything that I need to clarify? Okay, identifying the goals. So when I think about communicating with teens, one of the questions I ask myself is, what do I want here? What's going on? What's my goal? And so I like to think of this as building a bridge between yourself and the teenager. So my communication is an attempt to build a bridge. Let's just think briefly here. We have a teenager over here. So you can put yourself or imagine in your mind, we have a teenager over here. We have an adult over here. In the teenager's mind, when they're over here and they're looking at the adult, what is their perception? Now, I know this might be hard for you to remember back, but what's the teen thinking? Well, the teen is probably thinking they don't understand. They don't really understand. Because remember, all these changes are taking place. Their world feels so complex, and they're trying to navigate this. And so in their mind, you're thinking, the adult doesn't understand. They might be thinking they're closed-minded. And the reason they think that they're closed-minded is because when they did try to open their heart to them and they did try to start to express themselves, somehow, maybe without trying it, it felt like the window or the door or whatever metaphor you want to use was slammed shut on them. And so it reinforced in their mind, these adults, they're closed-minded. They don't understand. Maybe in their mind, they're looking at the adult and they're thinking, they're not really interested in me. They don't actually want to invest in me. Well, we go over here to the adult, and the adult's looking at the teenager. What's the adult thinking? Well, the adults are thinking, they don't actually want my opinion. They don't actually want my opinion. Have you ever felt that way? I've felt that way. I felt like, you know what? Why even waste my time? I'm sure they don't care about my opinion. They don't actually want to know what I think. They think they know it all. The adult's thinking in their mind, they know it all. Okay, and they just think they know it all. And then maybe the teens are trying to avoid us. Have you ever felt that way? You know, it's like in your mind, as you look at them, you're like, well, they're just trying to avoid me. They don't want to encounter me or engage in me or interact with me. And so are we going to get anywhere? The teenager over here is thinking that way, and the adult over here is thinking this way. Are we going to get anywhere here? Probably not. Somehow we have to build a bridge. Somehow we have to build a bridge between these perceptions and try to cross over and meet in the middle. And so build a bridge with perceptions. I think one of the most helpful things for me, going back to this slide, is just to realize that the teens, these perceptions that I have of them, are they're probably not true. It's just my perception. And so it's freeing for me to realize that, you know, excuse me, they probably are interested in what we have to say. It's probably the way we're going about saying it. They probably don't think they know it all. They just want to be heard. They're probably not trying to avoid us. They just want to know, do you care enough to make the first move? And so somehow we have to build a bridge and cross over this gap. The second thing we want to think about in relating to our goals is identifying, you know, our posture. What is your posture? And whenever we talk about, you know, learning something new, posture is a big part of that. Okay, if you coach any kind of sport, a big part of it is the posture. When you sit down to learn piano, they teach you how to sit and how to hold your hands. And posture is a big part of learning something new. When we communicate with teens, what's our posture? And maybe you've never thought about it in this way before, but I think we all bring a posture to our communication. What is yours? I want to suggest that our posture should be one of connecting. One of connecting. At the end of the day, you're here because you want to influence teenagers in a positive way. You want to communicate effectively. That's your goal. Some of us are going to be tempted to do what seems to be the easiest thing, and that is just try to control the teenager. That's the easiest thing. Make the decisions for them, set the lines for them, tell them, this is what you're going to do, this is why you're going to do it, and it's the easiest thing is to try to control them in order to get the right results. But you all know that that doesn't work very well. And so, if we draw a line, I like to think of this as a continuum. And on one side, we have control. And on the other side, I like to put the word connection. And I think that a lot of our communication lands somewhere on this continuum. Teens perceive it as either an attempt to control or as an attempt to connect. And so I like to take a step back and ask myself, what am I really trying to do here? Am I trying to control a teen's outcome? Am I trying to get the decision that I want? Or am I seeking to connect with that teen and influence them through that connection? I think there are some themes that come to my mind when we think about control. I think of an emphasis on authority. I think of maybe manipulation and intimidation. I think of something that's confrontational. I think of something that tends to be more relationally distant. And I know that I've made mistakes, you know, in this area. I know I have. I know with my own children, at times, I have relied on manipulative tactics in order to try to influence them, rather than influencing them through relationship. I've used shame. I've used guilt, shame, go together. I've used those things to try to push them in a direction rather than lead them through relationship. When I think about connection, I think of John chapter 10. I think of the Good Shepherd. And I think of Jesus, right, who says, I know my sheep and they know me. They know my voice. And they follow me. And I'm like, that's what we want. That's how we want to communicate with teens. They hear our voice. They know us. There's relationship. And they follow. So I think of relationship, empathy. I think of joining, trust. I think of something that's relationally close. And so when we communicate with teens, Again, the question when we think about our goals, what is our posture that we're bringing to the relationship or to the communication? If you're like me, models tend to be helpful. I tend to gravitate towards them because they help me organize my thoughts and process what's going on. And so I have found this to be helpful. This doesn't originate with me. It comes from a man named Dr. Rick Horn. Anybody recognize the name Dr. Rick Horn? Okay. So he has a book called something relating to angry teens. But he's done a lot of writing and teaching on this subject of communicating with teens. And he uses something he calls LCLP. And I've found it helpful. Okay, and so what L stands for is learning to listen big. And when teens come to us, or when we go to teens, one of the things we want to learn to do is be an active listener, not just waiting for our turn to talk, right? And somehow teens, they read between the lines and they can tell pretty quick if we're just waiting till they stop because we got something we really need to say to them. So Rick Horn has said, your listening needs to be a big deal to a teenager. It needs to be so big that it gets their attention. Listen big. And so I found this helpful, okay, when I'm interacting with a teenager, to remind myself, oh yeah, I gotta listen. That's my, if anything else, okay, I gotta listen. Listen big. Listen to what they're feeling. Also listen to the facts. Make sure you get both. C stands for clarify narrowly. Help them narrow down their big generalizations. Okay, if you've interacted with teens, they can make these great big hasty generalizations, and sometimes we need to help them narrow those big generalizations down. We might need to help them narrow down their unrealistic expectations, help them understand that they don't actually live in a dream world. Okay. And so we want to clarify narrowly, bring it down. And again, one of the ways we do this is by asking questions and listening big. L stands for looking wide and identifying what are the teen solutions here? What are the teen solutions? Now, Proverbs 20 verse 5 says, the purpose of a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. And so that's our role, to help draw out what's in the teen's heart. And we do this through listening, asking good questions, helping them clarify narrowly, and then helping them look wide for solutions. Teens have what we could call wise wants. A lot of times they want the right things. It's their inability to know what to do to get the right things. Have you ever noticed that? A lot of times they want the right things. And if you start asking questions, what they want isn't bad. It's just they're pushing the wrong buttons. And so we want to help them understand how to push the right buttons. And then P stands for plan small. What action is next? And take a bite-sized chunk rather than something that's real huge. Help them think about strategies and what they can do. Again, I've noticed over the years that teens often will set good goals. They often will want the right things, but they have no idea about how to go about achieving those goals. They don't know the next actions to take. And so as adults, one of the things we can do is help them pinpoint, you know, what's the next step that needs to happen, and will it work? Next, I would like to just share some connecting strategies. This is just some practical advice to help us become people that communicate effectively with teens. The first thing I want to say is develop yourself as a person that invites communication. I'm intrigued by the example of Jesus. Here he is, he's the Son of God, and he's interacting with all these people. And yet, do you ever think about how the poorest of the poor didn't hesitate to confront him or interrupt him? Jesus was a person that was interrupted, and he was okay with it. Are you a person that invites communication? Are you a person that invites connection? Do the teenagers around you feel free to interrupt your life, interrupt your world? We're all busy, and sometimes we walk around talking about how busy we are, and we're walking as fast as we possibly can. And remember the teenager over here? He looks at us, and he's thinking, he doesn't actually care. He's too busy. He doesn't have time. I think I do a poor job at this, probably, but one of my goals has been to keep slowing down. And if nothing else, trick everybody into think I'm slowing down. Right? Do not talk about how busy you are. When you're walking past teens, don't walk as fast as you possibly can. Slow down. Be a person that teens feel comfortable interrupting. Now, even as adults, you know this is true. Some of you here today, there might be somebody you'd like to talk to, but you don't actually go and initiate a conversation because why? They look too busy. Well, let's send a message to the people around us that we have time for you because you're important to us. Bryant H. McGill has said, one of the sincerest forms of respect is actually listening to what another has to say. The second thing is get alongside of them. Do things with them. Join them. Have fun with them. Look for ways to engage in their activities and not only invite them into yours. I remember a wise father telling me when I was a young father, he said, you know, when you're away and children have a whole bunch of toys out, and you say, hey, it's time to go home. This is what I did. I always said, pick up all your toys, and then I'd stand and watch. And maybe he observed that in me, I don't know, but he's like, you know, a wise father says, come, let's pick up the toys. And he gets down and he joins them. And I thought, you know what? That little word of wisdom applies to teenagers as well. You might not be a great athlete. They probably don't care. Join them. The other evening, I was interacting with some teenagers, and they're like, "Hey, we need a fourth guy. They wanted to play some basketball. We need another guy to make the teams fair." And I'm like, "Oh, that was the last thing I felt like doing. We had just eaten. I was full, and I did not want to do it." And I was like, "Well, tell you what. I'll get out there and I'll set screens." I can do that. I can pass the ball, but I'm probably not going to do anything else. And I got out there and I was puffing, you know, and some of them seemed to really enjoy it, just watching me, you know. And so, you know, join them, get alongside of them. I have found over the years, like, something happens when you get alongside of a teenager, especially young men. And so let's get alongside them and interact with them in that way. See, watch for open windows into their hearts. Often they'll crack the window. They'll test you. A teenager said to me once, he said, "Hey, what do you think God thinks about bisexuals?" So we talked about it. In my head, I'm thinking, okay, there's something more. He's just testing me. He just wants to see how I respond. Right? So they'll crack their heart open a little bit. And they want to see how you respond. And depending on your response will determine whether or not they keep going. Become a student of teens. Learn about them. Be present in times of trouble. When there's a teen in trouble, you run to them. Always run towards trouble, because that's when they open their hearts up and they're the most vulnerable. Ask powerful questions. Ask good why questions. And prepare your delivery. A good steak is served best on a nice plate. And so prepare your delivery. Sometimes it isn't what we have to say that they react to, but it's how we say it. All right. I am going to stop right there. Are there any questions or comments that you would have?
Can you give us your email
address? Yeah, I will do that. Yes.
In your last illustration, where the student or the young person cracked open their heart and
yes.
asked you that question, how did that end up? Was there something deeper?
Yes.
I asked you a yes or no question, that's all I
yeah. Yeah, yeah. They weren't asking a theological question. That was just a introduction question. Yes?
I'm curious what you have to say about like the transition from childhood to teenager. So when they're children, we do control what they
yes.
may or may not do for their safety.
Mm-hmm.
And then we increasingly want to give them more liberty make their own decisions, but at the same time keep them at least semi-safe. So how have you treated that?
The transition? I think more and more it's a slow process, but you have to start giving them decisions to make. And I think we all know that in the process you have to let them fail. And so there have been times when, you know, my children, like, you give them opportunities to make those choices and they make the choice and like, that wasn't the right one. Mm-hmm. And they fail and they experience the pain of it all. And then that's when you also need to come alongside them and gently shepherd them through the process. Good question. Anybody else?
In your second identifying goals, that section where you're trying to control or connect, how do you clarify narrowly without controlling?
So I think you ask good questions. Like, okay, I use this analogy a lot. I say, like, a soda machine, you know, if you go to a soda machine and you want a Pepsi and you hit the Sprite button, you're going to get what?
Sprite.
Well, there's a lot of young people that go to life and they want a certain outcome, but they're hitting the wrong button. And they just keep hitting the wrong button. So they're like, I want a Pepsi, and they hit the Sprite button again. And they keep hitting it. In my experience, a lot of times if you ask good questions and you ask the right questions, you're patient, you keep talking, you can help them begin to see that there's an inconsistency there. Help them spot it and help clarify that.
Thank you. Talk.
Dan, you referred to a book by Rick Horn. What was the title of that book?
Yeah, something about angry, unmotivated teens. Forget the first part. Yes.
Well, just if you could put a word on, you know, teach us a little bit about what are the good questions, what kind of questions.
Yeah, so I just think questions that start with why. You know, so like you see a teenager and they go and buy this new pair of shoes. And I say, so why'd you buy those shoes? Because I noticed that everybody else has them. And I know that. And they think, well, they were on sale. That wasn't the reason. And I say, well, so-and-so has this pair, but you didn't buy a pair like that. Why? And you make observations and then ask questions, and that's what I do. Anybody else? Okay, yes?
On your topic of the teens tend to make unwise choices with companions?
Yes.
So when you have a child that's adamant about spending time with someone that you really, really have your reservations, where is that trust level? As in, do you let them sometimes? Do you cut it all off? Do you, when they say, I'm going to hang out with this person, I like this person? And
yeah, so that's a great question. And I think there's not just one right answer for how to approach their complex situations. And it sounds like I'm trying to get avoid answering, but we need the wisdom of God and guidance to be wise in navigating those kinds of situations. We need to walk alongside our teenagers. Okay, I'm out of time. Thank you so much. Oh, did I put my email address up there? Yeah, thank you for your attention. I appreciate it. Just hang on. Turn it back to the moderator.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from REACH 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from REACH or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.